Hello, it's Debbie back again on Wednesday, April 20th, 2016, with the Decatur Herald and Review e-edition. I will start this morning with, of course, the front page, agriculture. National Food Works placing Decatur at center of food innovation. This is by Chris Lisvardi, who's a Herald and Review staff writer. Decatur. Interest in putting Decatur at the center of food innovation continued to build with the grand opening Tuesday of National Foods Service in the former Brush College School building. A ribbon cutting for the facility at 575 North Brush College Road was held with Archer Daniels Midland Company Chairman, President, and CEO, Juan Luciano, and Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner among the state and local officials in attendance. ADM's support has put the startup business in a unique position for ongoing success, said Tony Cacomo, C-A-C-C-O-M-O, Cacomo, who's managing partner of National Food Works along with Jim Milano. This is what we believe is one of the largest facilities of its kind in the country, Cacomo said. The relationship is unlike any between a Fortune 500 company and a small startup. They had a vision and believe in us. ADM, which invested $2 million to help the business get started, sees changes happening in the food industry, Luciano said. He said $18 billion in revenue has shifted in the past few years from large to small food packaging companies. The ability to bring small entrepreneurs in the market is on track now, Luciano said. Together, we can help make Central Illinois a prominent new center for food innovation, in the process spurring economic growth in our region. National Food Works will be assisting aspiring entrepreneurs start food-based businesses and expand production capabilities to reach larger markets, Cacomo said. The 40,000-square-foot building, which is located next to ADM's Randall Research Center, provides the space to work with and teach those entrepreneurs as ADM and National Food Works offer resources and expertise to help customers address changing consumer preferences, he said. As part of those efforts, Luciano said ADM and National Food Works launched the Food Innovation Challenge, which welcomes entrepreneurs from 7 states to build and sell their food business idea. Innovative products in the categories of baked goods, snack-type bar, or condiment are being accepted for the contest. The winners will receive a total of $100,000 in seed funding and services, with access to business and production mentors to help make their company successful. For more information, go to www.foodinnovationchallenge.com on the web. Food Innovation Challenge. Applications are being accepted through May 16th, with entries open to Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kentucky, Michigan, Missouri, or Wisconsin residents. Rauner said it is clear food innovation is a key to future economic success in Illinois and pledged his support from experience in the venture capital business to assist National Food Works as it starts operation. This can be a hub long-term for incredible innovation and economic growth, Rauner said. The challenge for National Food Works to meet its goals is about to begin as its operations get underway, said Lee Strom, chairman of FARM Illinois. That's an acronym, F-A-R-M, Illinois, a statewide strategic plan being developed to turn Illinois into a leading hub for food and agricultural system innovation. Decatur can benefit from the attention National Food Works will be able to create as it works with other businesses, Mayor Julie Moore-Wolf said. She credited the effort Cacomo and Milano had put into starting the business. The next wave of prosperity for Decatur starts with entrepreneurs, Moore-Wolf said. It's been a long time coming. They've worked hard and dreamed big. The use of local vendors while remodeling the facility shows the commitment National Food Works has to supporting the community, said Miranda Rothrock, Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce President. Utilizing local business is key to continued growth in the local community, Rothrock said. The major advantage Decatur can provide to newly created food-based businesses is its access to transportation systems, including highway and rail, captured through the Midwest Inland Port, said Ryan McCrady, Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County President. That is a key benefit that can't be replicated, McCrady said. One-third of the nation's population is within a day's drive of Decatur. One-third of the nation's population is within a day's drive of Decatur. McCrady said businesses tend to locate around others with similar missions as the services to support them exist. He said Decatur has that support to offer National Food Works and other companies interested in the area. Kokomo said consumer trends are changing toward interest in locally produced food. National Food Works is designed with those trends in mind, he said. A large refrigerated room and walk-in freezer in what used to be the courtyard of the school are a part of what Kokomo says is being needed to meet the evolving trends. Sufficient space to store products at cool temperature will be needed, Kokomo said. The nature of food is to localize more and use fewer chemicals, Kokomo said. With shorter shelf lives for products, temperature controls will be a huge part of the food industry in the future. The first phase of construction includes packaging and storage area, loading docks, forklift ramps, and a training room dedicated to Luciano, Kokomo said. He expects further work to expand the facility will be started in the near future. Work to finish off the remaining part of the old school is expected to begin in the fall, Kokomo said. A food aggregation center will be constructed this summer in what is now the parking lot, he said. Kokomo said future additions are being planned for approximately 7.5 acres of land surrounding the existing building. The end of the article. Continuing on, plans offer university funding. More proposals made for higher education funding. This is by Dan Petrella, the Springfield Bureau Chief for H&R. Springfield, there are once again competing proposals to get money to public universities that have been deprived of state funding during the nearly year-long budget standoff at the Capitol. The House Executive Committee signed off on a plan Tuesday from State Representative Rita Mayfield, Democrat Waukegan, that would send a full year's worth of funding to the universities hardest hit by the lack of a budget. Chicago State, Eastern Illinois, Western Illinois, and Northeastern Illinois universities. Mayfield said she plans to amend the bill to add $10 million for Southern Illinois University, 5% of its annual state funding. Without this funding, we will see one university close this month, Mayfield said, referring to Chicago State. Eastern and Western aren't far behind, she said. The idea is to keep the doors open until hopefully we get a budget this summer, Mayfield said. The total price tag of her plan is $163.3 million, and the revenue would come from forgiving repayment of money borrowed from special state funds to plug holes in last year's budget. I'm going to read that again. The total price tag of her plan is $163.3 million, and the revenue would come from forgiving repayment of money borrowed from special state funds to plug holes in last year's budget. State Representative Mike Fortner, Republican West Chicago, is proposing a plan that covers one-third of annual funding to all 9 public university systems and one semester's worth of grants to low-income students through the Monetary Award Program, which isn't included in Mayfield's plan. Fortner's plan would cost $558.3 million, with the revenue coming from the state's Education Assistance Fund. The fund, which gets dedicated revenue from the state income tax, gambling, and other sources, is expected to have $600 million available by June 30th, the end of the fiscal year. Fortner said his stopgap plan, which has the support of Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and State Senator Pat McGuire, Democrat Joliet, chairman of the Senate Higher Education Committee, would provide a critical piece to bridge us across until a comprehensive solution is achieved. This plan will provide certainty for students as well as universities, he said. This is the time of year is very important. This is when students are making their commitments to where they will attend next fall. McGuire, who joined 9 House Republicans at a Tuesday news conference announcing the plan, said jobs and programs have been cut at universities as a result of budget stalemate. The next step is the possible loss of accreditation, particularly at Chicago State. If that happens to a university, McGuire said, we might as well put a tag on the toe of that institution. Fortner's plan faces an uphill battle in the House. Steve Brown, spokesman for House Speaker Michael Madigan, Democrat Chicago, said there are 2 better options already on the table. This comes in a distant third at the moment, Brown said. In addition to Mayfield's bill, there's also a $3.9 billion spending bill on Rauner's desk that would authorize spending for all of higher education, including community colleges and MAP grants and other social services that aren't receiving funding due to the impasse. Rauner said he won't sign the bill because there's no way to pay for it. State Representative Reggie Phillips, Republican Charleston, said he supports both Mayfield's and Fortner's plans because Eastern Illinois is in desperate need of state money. I'm a chief co-sponsor on hers. I'm a co-sponsor on his, Phillips said. Which one comes to the top, I'm going to be... Whichever one comes to the top, I'm going to be there for. Senator Dale Ryder, Republican Mattoon, who also represents Eastern Illinois, has filed legislation similar to Fortner's. Instead of funding all universities, however, dole out $400 million from the Education Assistance Fund based on need. It would also include $100 million from that fund for community colleges and $365 million from general revenue for a full year's worth of MAP grant. End of that. More government and politics. Illinois constitutional amendments advance in legislature. Again, Dan Petrella, the Springfield Bureau Chief. Springfield. With an early May deadline looming, several proposals to amend the Illinois Constitution are advancing in the General Assembly. The Senate Executive Committee voted Tuesday to send 3 proposed amendments to the full Senate for a vote, and House committees did likewise Monday with 2 measures. It's ultimately up to voters to decide whether to change the Illinois Constitution. If the legislature wants to put a question to voters, each chamber must approve the proposal by a 3/5 majority at least 6 months before the next general election. Lawmakers are limited to asking voters to change 3 articles of the Constitution in a given election, which means not all of proposals headed to the chamber floors can end up on the November ballot. The Senate committee approved measures that would do away with the Constitution's flat tax provision, change the way legislative and congressional districts are drawn, and eliminate the lieutenant governor's office. House committees approved a different redistricting plan and a proposal from House Speaker Michael Madigan that would require the state to cover the majority of the cost of public education. State Senator Don Harmon, Democrat Oak Park, chairman of the executive committee, is sponsoring the amendment that would allow Illinois to begin charging different tax rates based on income. Harmon said the proposal would allow Illinois to join the modern era and noted that neighboring Wisconsin has a graduated income tax system. The proposal is accompanied by a bill that would lower the tax rate for 99% of taxpayers while raising rates for wealthier residents on their income above certain thresholds. For example, an unmarried person would pay 8.75% on income between $500,000 and $1 million and a 9.75% on income above $1 million. The current rate is 3.75 for all taxpayers. The proposed amendment itself doesn't deal with what the rates would be. One of the many concerns the idea raised for Republicans, State Senator Sue Retson, Republican Morris, called it an open door for allowing higher taxes on the middle class. An identical proposed amendment sponsored by State Representative Christian Mitchell, Democrat Chicago, is scheduled for a House committee hearing Thursday. The Senate redistricting plan, sponsored by State Senator Kwame Raoul, Democrat Chicago, is substantially different from one being considered in the House and one being pushed by a group called Independent MAPS. Unlike those proposals, which would create independent commissions, Raoul's plan would leave the process for drawing district lands in the hand of the General Assembly with approval from the governor. Would do away with the current system of dividing each state Senate district into 2 state House districts, making the boundaries independent. This would enable better representation in minority communities, Raoul said. State Senator Tom Cullerton, Democrat Villa Park, is proposing the elimination of the lieutenant governor's office, a move he says would show the state's commitment to consolidating government operations and save $1.6 million annually, a tiny fraction of the state's roughly $36 billion budget. While his fellow Democrats passed the bill out of committee, most indicated they wouldn't support it on the Senate floor. One of their concerns is the change would set up a situation where a vacancy in the office of governor could be filled by an attorney general, the next official in line of succession, of a different party. Cullerton noted that his proposal is identical to one sponsored by U.S. Representative Darren LaHood, Republican Peoria, when he was in the state Senate. Despite that history, it failed to win any Republican support. A House committee last week approved a similar proposal. Also in the House, Madigan's proposed education funding amendment is headed for a floor vote. The Speaker, who was a delegate to the Illinois 1970 Constitutional Convention, said the measure is intended to enshrine that education is a fundamental right and one that should be primarily the state's obligation to fund. The measure wouldn't set up a specific formula for funding school. That would be up to the legislature to determine based on their new requirement if it's approved by voters, Madigan said. End of that article. And lastly, on the very front page of the Herald and Review for April 20th is out of AP, telephone companies unplugging landlines. This is Tom Bell, who's an AP writer. Whitefield, Maine. Peter Fralick lives at the end of a mile-long dirt road in a part of Maine where pickup trucks share the right-of-way with wandering dairy cows. The local cable company won't run a line down the road, and his cell phone is useless because he lives in a wireless dead zone. Now Fralick, 70, worries a new Maine law will eventually allow the telephone company to unplug him from the plain old telephone service he depends on. If they get out of the landline business, I will have no way to connect with anybody else unless I will get in my truck and drive out, he said. Maine is joining a growing group of states that have passed laws to limit or remove requirements that telephone companies provide traditional, price-controlled phone service. In essence, moving toward a day when plain old landline phone service goes from an endangered species to extinct. Concerns is acute in Maine, the most rural state and the one with the oldest average population. 13 states in the past 3 years have had telephone companies. 13 states in the past 3 years have said telephone companies can use alternative technology such as wireless and broadband internet to provide basic service. Maine is the first to end basic phone service mandates in communities where there is competition, said Sherry Lichtenberg, principal of the National Regulatory Research Institute. Fairpoint said it would still offer landline service in those areas, but the service quality and price will be left to the free market. California is considering similar legislation. Ohio, Michigan, and Kentucky have passed laws allowing telephone companies to stop offering traditional phone service and are now determining how to implement them, Lichtenberg said. It'll be interesting to see how fast other states follow Maine, she said. The bill signed last week by Maine Republican Governor Paul LePage gives the state largest telephone company, Fairpoint Communications, a level playing field in the most competitive areas of the state and maintains consumer protection in areas where choices are fewer, said Mike Reed, president of Fairpoint in Maine, which has struggled financially since buying Verizon's landline business in northern New England in 2007. Maine has recognized the tensions the entire country faces, Reed said. Consumer groups that fought the bill argued it would allow Fairpoint to abandon customers who still use their landline phones because they prefer the call quality and reliability. The senior advocacy group, AARP, which led the opposition, later agreed not to fight the bill after lawmakers added consumer protections that made it harder for the company to abandon service. Amy Reagan Gallant, a lobbyist for AARP, said the group nevertheless remains worried about the long-term future of traditional telephone service in Maine, with its implications for older people not using wireless technology. We suspect this is the beginning of the end of landline phones, she said. The issue resonates in Maine because vast parts of the state have spotty cell coverage and limited access to high speed. But traditional phone companies can no longer afford the high cost of maintaining the legacy phone network in rural areas, and policymakers have yet to figure out a long-term plan for sustaining that network, said John Banks, an attorney with U.S. Telecom, a trade group representing broadband service providers. It's a rural problem, he said. He said traditional telephone companies have only an 18% share of the voice market, with half of their customers served by wireless networks, and the remaining half split between old-style telephone lines and voice-over internet protocols. Service. The Maine law phases out state oversight of the old-style service, removing regulations first in seven cities where there is competition among providers and adding more communities until a limit of 22 is reached. The law allows Fairpoint to ask regulators for permission to discontinue landline service altogether in those communities if regulators determine the public would benefit. Elsewhere in the state, the law requires Fairpoint to provide basic service to every customer who wants it, but that the company is now allowed to raise its rates up to 5% annually. The battleground now moves to California. Lawmakers there last week heard testimony on a bill advanced by AT&T that would allow the company to discontinue legacy phone service in areas where alternative phone services are available. Consumer groups and Communication Workers of America, the union that represents workers at AT&T and Verizon, are fighting the bill, saying it would replace regulated landline service with unregulated wireless. But Lichtenberg said she sees no evidence to date that ending the mandate has hurt consumers. Editorial comment, they say nothing about trying to get medical aid to the house. End of article and my comment. Continuing with the local section of A, Frasers United Way Volunteer of the Year. Volunteer is always there. This is by Justin Kahn of the Herald and Review. Decatur. Amy Frasier gave her dollar out of every paycheck, like many of the millions of United Way donors. But it was only when Frasier began working at Hickory Point Bank that she saw the impact United Way could have. I had the opportunity to go on a fund distribution. It was eye-opening, Frasier said. It really gave me a pulse point of what's going on in the community and the need that's out there. 3 years later, at Tuesday's annual meeting and awards banquet, Frasier was honored as United Way of Decatur and Mid-Illinois Volunteer of the Year. She's always there, United Way Executive Director Debbie Bogle said as she presented Frasier the award in the Beach House's banquet room. Any opportunity there is to help out, she does it. Frasier isn't one to say no to helping out. It just started like, yeah, sure, I'll help, whatever you need, and grew from there, Frasier said, laughing. Karen Schneller, Decatur Memorial Hospital Foundation Executive Director, was awarded the Employee Campaign Leader of the Year. I sat in a United Way booth with her, and she didn't let anyone get past without getting our information out, said Stan Parks, United Way Resource Development Associate. Schneller organized an Apple Watch giveaway with the entrance fee a donation to the United Way and helped raise employee donations by 77%. As Parks called up Schneller to present the award to her, he said, "Bring up the lady in the blonde wig." Parks sat down and then realized his mistake. "Did I say wig? I meant bun." The crowd laughed, as did Schneller, who held her arm out toward Parks and said, "Thank you to my new best friend." Tate and Lyle earned the A Company That Cares Award, and the Campaign of the Year went to Land of Lincoln Credit Union. Live United Awards went to Bergner's Jennifer Millett, Caterpillar's Jeff Taylor, ADM's Francita Harvey and Gina Smith, Peerless Cleaner's Katie Etchison, Y103's Terrace Tat Taylor, Exelon and Moultrie County Cults. Counseling Center. I think that's probably Live United Wards as opposed to Live United Wards. Live United Wards. The organization raised $1.6 million in 2015, besting last year's total. End of that. Things here in the school. LSA takes voyage with Titanic history. This is by Valerie Wells from the Herald and Review. Decatur, people considering a trip in the brand new and unsinkable RMS Titanic in 1912 couldn't see into the vessel's tragic future. With that in mind, LSA high school sophomores Tanner Hike and Xavier Todd dressed up, complete with bow ties, to sell potential passengers on the luxury that awaited them. "There were a lot of attractions on the ship, and we thought it'd be easy to sell it," Tanner said. "The boys wanted to look as businesslike as possible, which is why they dressed up," Xavier said. Every spring, Allison Nolan, assistant high school principal and English teacher, assigned sophomores to read a nonfiction book on the Titanic, which sank overnight, April 14th, 15th, 1912, on its maiden voyage. They also watched the 1997 film. Then, based on their personal interests, they choose some feature of the ship, the voyage or the disaster, and spend weeks researching all the details for the event Nolan dubbed the Titanic Museum. Some students chose to study the food, others the fashion, the music, or the survivors. Gabriella Henkel and Aaron Johnson chose the survivors, some 750 of them out of more than 2,200 passengers and crew. Among the survivors, Gabrielle said, were three of the 15 dogs on board. One of them was saved because they sneaked him up, wrapped up like a baby, she said. The pair made survivor cards with details about the people who lived to tell the tale, as well as a replica of a boarding pass, front and back. Aaron was intrigued by the reverse side of that boarding pass in particular. Not only did it have your name and your ticket class, but the reason you were on board, he said, showing a sample. The person whose pass it had been was getting married and moving to New York. Sixth graders visit the sophomores' museum to supplement their own studies, and unbeknownst to them will take a test on facts of the high school students' presentations. The high school kids wrote the questions for the sixth grade test, Nolan said. Eric Shelton drives a race car and knows about engines, so he and his partner, Noah Robinson, focused on the Titanic steam engines, their size and power, and how much work it took to keep them going. Men in the lowest level of the ship had to shovel coal into the giant boilers constantly. Eric used his laptop as part of the display, with a video explaining how steam engines work in addition to the photos and specs on the Titanic's own steam engine. I didn't think these kids probably knew anything about steam engines, Eric said. End of that article. And finishing part one for April 20th, Wednesday, 2016. Part one is DeWitt County ready for its new animal shelter to open? This is by Kevin Barlow, a Lee News Service writer. Clinton. Because it was so long ago, DeWitt County Animal Control Administrator Tamara McPheeters really couldn't remember the first time she approached county officials about the need for a new animal shelter. I know we've had at least four county board chairmen since then. I just know that it's long overdue. This is something I've dreamed and dreamed about. On Saturday, McPheeters and county officials will show off the new 3,000-square-foot building at the DeWitt County East Annex at 5955 Weldon Springs Road, about 3 miles east of Clinton. A 3-hour open house will begin at 11 a.m. on Saturday. This is such a great big step forward for DeWitt County, County Board member Sue Whitted said. It's great for the animals and for our citizens to have such a beautiful place. The former animal shelter on South Cane Street in Clinton was a shed that was transformed into a shelter in the 70s. It was never meant to be an animal shelter, McBeater said. People didn't want to go there. It was depressing, nasty, and we were always having to apologize for the smell and appearance. We could only get a few volunteers because people didn't want to come out there and go home with their clothes smelling bad, she added. People have told us this is when this one opens, they'll be more happy to volunteer. The facility employs 2 full-time staff members. The new facility will have 18 dog kennels, an increase of 8, plus a dedicated cat room and a dedicated exam room. It will have storage areas for pet supplies and donated items and a separate outside area for dog run in cages. A ventilation system will force fresh air in and stale air out at all times to help control the smell. Another 1,000 square feet remains for future expansion when and if needed. The county purchased the former Black's Heating and Air Conditioning property for $325,000 and also built a storage building for county use on the property. A third building on the site is leased to PSI, Paramedic Services of Illinois, the ambulance service that serves DeWitt County. Officials estimate the cost of the project, not including the land, was about $350,000. A lot of good people have done a lot of good work in the last year and a half to get to this point, County Board Chairman Dave Newberg said. I'm proud of this entire board and the committee that worked very hard on this, such as Chris Rogers, the Public Safety Chairman. Prior to him, Dan Ballinger worked very hard too, but I'm thrilled to death with how this turned out. The former animal shelter will be sold to the city of Clinton and used for storage, Newberg said. End of that article. Just a glimpse at the last Crime in Courts thing as we close. Woman covers cars in ketchup and mayonnaise. Decatur. Police say a Decatur woman Furious that her two-timing boyfriend and his other girlfriend covered both their cars completely in a mixture of ketchup and mayonnaise. Chantel S. Dawson, 22, is also accused of extensively scratching both cars, slashing two tires on each, and smashing their rearview mirrors. The victims had first seen the damage about 4 a.m. March 9th and reported it to police, who arrested Dawson Sunday evening. She now faces two counts of criminal damage to property, and police have asked the victims for an update on repair costs, which may exceed $10,000. So that's the end of Section 1, April 20th, 2016. This is Debbie saying, talk to you again soon.